Hello there. Today is Thursday, July 20th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, a beloved icon of the U.S. Senate is diagnosed with brain cancer.
Political earthquake here in Arizona.
President Trump isn't letting Republicans give up on health care.
For 7 years, you promised the American people that you would repeal Obamacare.
The State Department reports on worldwide terrorism trends and the battle of the robots. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, the number of terrorist attacks worldwide and deaths from such attacks dropped in 2016 for the second straight year, according to a just-released annual country-by-country report by the U.S. State Department. Department's acting coordinator for counterterrorism, Justin Sibarel.
ISIS remained the most capable terrorist organization globally in 2016, directing and inspiring terrorist cells, networks, and individuals around the world, even as it faced increased military pressure in Iraq and Syria and suffered considerable territorial losses throughout the year.
The report also said Iran remains a top state sponsor of terrorism.
Iran remained the primary source of funding for Hezbollah and coordinated closely with Hezbollah in its efforts to create instability in the Middle East. Hezbollah is a designated foreign terrorist organization, and Iran has trained thousands of its fighters at camps in Iran. Hezbollah has contributed to the Assad regime and carried out several attacks against the Argentine border with Israel.
Terrorist attacks took place in 104 countries last year, but the majority occurred in just five countries: Iraq, Afghanistan, India, Pakistan, and the Philippines. Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. The U.S. Supreme Court halts refugee admissions temporarily. The UN chief is urging more international cooperation on Africa. The Pentagon is irked after Turkey publishes a map of U.S. military posts in North Syria. And Amazon launches a shopping social network. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Well, very sad news about a revered U.S. lawmaker. The Mayo Clinic in Phoenix says Senator John McCain has been diagnosed with brain cancer. A malignant tumor was discovered after looking in Arizona. Went surgery lot. Die. VOA's Victor B. Science Professor Sabato.
It's a tragedy, and we certainly wish Senator McCain well. I think everyone does. There's an example of bipartisanship or tripartisanship. Democrats, Republicans, and Independents will wish him a full recovery. It's a very tough illness, as anyone knows who's known someone with brain cancer, and of course Senator Ted Kennedy had the very same thing. On the other hand, there have been major advances in the treatment of brain tumors since the death of Senator Kennedy, and also great advances in the use of radiation and chemotherapy, which apparently Senator McCain is going to have. So I think it's very premature to talk about John McCain not being in the Senate. He's tough. He'll go through the treatment. I'm sure he'll remain in the Senate. With luck, he'll be able to survive for many years to come.
He is almost an institution in the U.S. Senate. He's a war hero, of course, and ran for president in 2008. Talk about his political career.
Senator McCain was first elected to the House of Representatives in 1982. He served 4 years there, and then succeeded Senator Barry Goldwater in 1986. And he's been in the Senate ever since. Of course, he's best known for his run for president in 2008. He didn't win, but no Republican could possibly have won. And Iraq was incredibly unpopular, and President Bush, the Republican president, was tremendously unpopular. So that was a foregone conclusion, but he made a race out of it. He was a tough candidate. And toughness really is the word that describes him best. If people doubt that, they need to go back to his more than 5 years in a North Vietnamese prison camp where he was frequently tortured in an extreme way. and he made it. He made it with severe injuries that hobble him to this day, but he made it, and he was a true American hero, despite what our current president said during his campaign, in which he said that he wasn't much of a hero because real heroes weren't captured. That was one of the great outrages among dozens of outrages in Donald Trump's campaign for the presidency.
Mr. McCain is, of course, 80 years old, just won re-election not too long ago. What is his future right now, and what the future of the Senate, given the close numbers between Republicans and Democrats?
Well, every vote matters, and Senator McCain will undoubtedly work with Senator McConnell to be there when he's needed, and Senator McConnell will try and schedule the critical votes that are close when Senator McCain can be in Washington. This is where the advances in treatment, radiation and chemotherapy, really matter. You can live a pretty normal life, assuming it's the kind of brain tumor that can be treated with those radiation and chemotherapy procedures. So he could be back in Washington for a few weeks and then return to the Mayo Clinic for further treatment, or possibly have the treatment at a facility near Washington.
And there's also reaction in John McCain's home state. Joining me now is Arizona talk show host Bill Buckmaster with KOVI in Tucson, who has known McCain for 30 years. So what's the mood like there?
Cancer diagnosis is a political earthquake here in Arizona. John McCain, some people love him. Some people say he should have retired years ago. He is somewhat of a controversial figure. So I think one thing everybody has come together on is the fact that this man is a great American who has really devoted his life to the service of this country. And whether you like what he has stood for politically or not, that doesn't matter at this point. I think people are really offering up prayers and trying to come together for what's best for this man.
Absolutely. And he is one tough cookie. You know, if anybody can overcome something like this, it would be him. And certainly a lot of people have said just that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was just reflecting, and I know this is a very difficult cancer, the one he has been saddled with. But I was just reflecting on former President Jimmy Carter. And I don't know the exact type of brain cancer that President Carter
right.
had. And he underwent extensive chemotherapy and radiation, and
now he's out helping build houses.
Yeah, he's over 90 years old, and he was up in Canada most recently building homes for Habitat for Humanity, one of his big causes. So I would not count John McCain out. In fact, what we're hearing here in Arizona tonight is that he has no intention of resigning. He's going to fight this, and he's going to go back to the Senate. And, of course, he is not up for re-election for a couple of years, so we'll see what happens. But I would not count him out.
All right. Well, we all, of course, wish John McCain a speedy recovery and all the best. U.S. President Donald Trump is telling Senate Republicans they need to keep a promise to voters to repeal the country's health care law, championed by former President Barack Obama. Trump invited all Republican senators to the White House Wednesday to talk about health care, a day after the collapse of the party's effort to overturn and replace the law.
We're in this room today to deliver on our promise to the American people to repeal Obamacare and to ensure that they have the health care that they need. We have no choice. We have to repeal and replace Obamacare.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell scheduled a vote next week to repeal the law outright without a replacement, but at least three Republican senators have said they will vote against it.
It's pretty obvious we've had difficulty in getting 50 votes to proceed. But what I want to disabuse any of you of is the notion that we will not have that vote next week. We're going to vote on the motion to proceed to the bill next week.
Well, joining me now to discuss is Los Angeles-based healthcare attorney Harry Nelson and author of the book From Obamacare to Trump Care, Why You Should Care. Harry, thanks for being with us. So where do we go from here?
You know, I think there's going to be a messaging contest here about what the Republicans ultimately do. Is repeal and replace, or whether it was a failure? The whole thing is coming down to a messaging contest. It's very clear that the Republican Senate caucus is too divided when it comes to the Affordable Care Act and what to do next to pass a broad repeal. There's no way for Senator McConnell to bring together the conservatives in the caucus who want to see a deep cut to the Medicaid spending and repeal of the Obamacare taxes in order to support tax cuts and the tax reform that are their driving issue, and at the same time satisfy the Republican moderates who want to save Medicaid because it's working in their states for the uninsured, for people who are out of work, and who are trying to actually avoid pain in terms of lost insurance coverage to their constituencies. So there's absolutely no way to bring together those two factions on a common repeal bill, which is why we saw that Plan C that had a short lifespan yesterday, a repeal and delay, was the only viable option. When people can't agree, then the only option is just to vote to get rid of it and then wait on what's going to come next.
So ultimately, do you think the Affordable Care Act will be weakened?
I do think the Affordable Care Act is going to be weakened, if not by, not only by by legislative reform, but also by the fact that Secretary Price and the Department of Health and Human Services are in the hands of a president who wants to see the Affordable Care Act fail. So most of the Affordable Care Act provisions begin with language, the secretary shall, dot, dot, dot. And so, so this administration, you know, on the first day of this administration, January 20, President Trump issued an executive order directing all federal agencies to relax enforcement of the Affordable Care Act wherever possible in anticipation of a repeal. So what I expect to happen is that whatever the Republicans finally pass, President Trump will continue that executive order, and Secretary Price will be looking for opportunities to continue to undermine the Affordable Care Act, again, particularly with respect to the insurance exchanges and the middle class.
But doesn't that, when you say undermine, and the president has said we'll let it fail, but isn't that sort of saying, okay, well, we're going to let a lot of people just lose their health insurance and you're on your own?
For the middle class, at least to the extent that they were below 400% of federal poverty level, which is, by the way, is about 60% of America is below that level. It's a roughly for a household of four, it's a household income of about $90,000, below $90,000. For that group, the insurance is not working in its current state, right? For those households, copays, deductibles are still too high, and there's been a great frustration. So to the extent that President Trump allows the insurance exchanges to fail and allows essentially a system that's not working to get worse, I mean, the Republican perspective is that the free market will step in, right? That the insurance companies will be able to offer lower cost policies that have a skinnier benefit level that are catastrophic. Those will work for some people. And we still have a system in place where hospitals will be required to provide emergency coverage. So the Republicans are going to argue that the market system will work better, that having more limited coverage where people have emergency room and catastrophic coverage and people have to pay out of pocket for everything else is going to force healthcare providers to lower their prices and to find a place where doctors and other providers offer services that patients can afford. So I don't think that Republicans believe that allowing the exchanges to fail is bad for American healthcare. That's the argument that you essentially are hearing when Senator McConnell got up to announce the new repeal and delay plan last year.
Right. Now we know that the Congressional Budget Office did come out with a report. What was their latest report on, and what did it say?
The latest Congressional Budget Office report announced that the anticipated loss of coverage for the repeal and delay plan would be $32 million. So that's up from $22 million for the original Republican Senate plan.
So basically, if they do just repeal, Just get rid of the Affordable Care Act. 32 million people will lose their health care.
Some part of that is the Medicaid population, and some part of that is the insurance market. The other big negative, the Medicaid piece, and the uncertainty for all the Medicaid beneficiaries in the states that expanded, is the insurance markets. The not knowing what's coming next is incredibly destabilizing for all of the health plans. For example, here in California, Covered California, the state exchange, announced that they were delaying the publication of the plans for the next enrollment season this fall until August. They were supposed to come out, and Covered California delayed because nobody knows what exactly is going to come next in a repeal and delay scenario.
All right. Los Angeles-based healthcare attorney Harry Nelson, thank you so much for being with us. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. For detailed information about your favorite sports, visit our website, voaafrica.com. And if you want to chat with me and sports fans in Africa and all over the world, visit my Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. There, the sports talk never stops. So come on, join the action with the Sunny Side of Sports.
VOA's International Edition continues now as we turn to what's trending on social media. Andrew Palchevsky is here. Andrew, as always, I'm sure something crazy going on in social media. What's the latest?
One of the crazy things we consistently see on social media are rumors that you're going to have to pay to use social networks. I see this time and time again on Facebook. Starting next week, you're going to have to pay to use Facebook. And of course, they're always false. But Facebook is actually launching a paid subscription service. Now, don't worry, you can still use Facebook for free, but you may have to pay to read certain articles on the site. Now, Facebook's planning on doing this with the publishers that use their instant articles. What they're going to do is allow them to charge people to access those instant articles, kind of like what the New York Times or Washington Post does. You get 10 free articles a month, and then if you want to read any more than that, you're going to have to pay as part of the subscription. This is something that a lot of the publishers have wanted for a long time on Facebook. They want to generate revenue, and so it's borrowing that model that other news outlets have used. So it's supposed to start as a test in October. Not entirely clear how this is going to be implemented, but it is an interesting shift towards the news content provider role of Facebook. We've talked a lot about Facebook taking editorial control of some of the content that goes on the site. And now this is borrowing a page from, as we said, the New York Times, Washington Post, other newspapers that do this paid subscription service. So it's going to be interesting to see how this works out, if people like it, if people actually pay for it.
Yeah, that will be interesting to see.
That's always been the problem with newspapers, is that people don't actually pay for the content. But Facebook is going to try it out, and we will see this fall how it works out.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So anything else going on?
Yeah, fun story. Always good when we have a fun story,
yes.
Right?
And this one, always use happy news.
Yeah, so we always use happy news, and this one is about Despacito, the song that was released from Puerto Rican musicians Luis Fonsi and Daddy Yankee, released back in January. And then the remix featuring Justin Bieber was released in the springtime. 7 months since its initial release, it is now the most streamed song of all time. Across all streaming platforms, 4.6 billion plays across all the different streaming services. That includes the original song in Spanish, the remix, other versions that have come out, but speaks to how popular this song has been around the world and speaks to how much people are using streaming music and communicating that through digital media. People aren't buying as many songs and albums. They're just going right to the streaming services, paying for subscriptions there and listening to music. And if that wasn't enough, Despacito, the music video, is poised to become the top viewed video on YouTube. It was Gangnam Style by the Korean star Psy for probably a couple years. And then 1 week ago, Psy was dethroned by the music video for the song See You Again by Charlie Puth and Wiz Khalifa from the Fast and Furious movies. But Despacito has been gaining so many YouTube views, they're saying within the next week or two, it's going to be the top viewed video on YouTube. So not only the most streamed song ever in the history of the world, the top viewed video.
Gosh.
So,
wow.
and if you look at the figures in just the 7 months since it was released, it already has 2.6 billion YouTube views. So 4.6 billion streams, 2.6 billion YouTube views. This is a hit around the world, and it's one that digital and social media have really embraced and run with.
All right, Andrew. Thanks as always. You can follow him on Twitter at APAL. Well, robots from around the world clashed in Washington, D.C. this week. It's part of the global competition bringing high school students together to learn tech, but also to learn to cooperate to solve important problems. VOA's Steve Barragona reports.
It's part soccer match, part science exhibit, part United Nations. The first global challenge brought high schoolers from nearly 160 countries to Washington. They built robots to sort blue balls from orange ones and deliver them to different parts of the playing field. With its spirit of friendly international competition, it's like a robotics Olympics, but better, says founder Dean Kamen.
The sports in the Olympics aren't the sports that will give kids the skill sets, the vision, the courage, the technical expertise to take on the world's problems.
Kamen says these students are learning those problem-solving skills, along with the math, engineering, and programming prowess to be global tech leaders. But they also learn collaboration. Each match is 3-on-3. Teams have to cooperate to get the job done. Lita Azizi is with the Afghan team.
Every team has their own character to them. I can't say that we are good or they are good, but we are very excited and a bit nervous.
The Afghan team had extra challenges. An all-girl team in a male-dominated field from a country torn by conflict. Plus, their team was denied a visa, twice. After an international uproar, President Donald Trump cleared them.
When we got rejected twice by the United States Embassy, we didn't feel defeated. We made our robot within 2 weeks, and we have our robot here. But we saw that God wanted us, and we got accepted. This time again, it is in God's hands. Whatever is in our destiny, but one thing is for sure, we will never lose our hope.
They did not win the most matches. Finland did. But that was never really the point, says Dean Kamen.
We've created a game where 160 robots are going to fight each other, and most of them will lose. But every kid that designed and built and sweated and worked over that robot has won.
Next year's competition will be in Mexico City. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
Well, a new film from French director Luc Besson, Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets, opened this month. As VOA's David Byrd tells us, the futuristic sci-fi film marries overwhelming visuals and strong acting with its female lead to transport viewers to a distant galaxy.
It's the 28th century, and Major Valerian, played by Dane DeHaan, and Laureline, his partner, played by Cara Delevingne, are special operatives hoping to save the city Alpha from a mysterious dark force that aims to destroy it and the universe. Alpha is a city made up of a thousand planets where alien species and humans have all learned to work together for everyone's benefit.
Welcome to Alpha. The city of a thousand planets, where for hundreds of years every species has shared their knowledge and their intelligence with each other. It's paradise.
The film is based on a 1967 French comic series, Valerian and Laureline, which a young Luc Besson devoured as a child. Besson, who directed 2014's Lucy and another futuristic space opera, The Fifth Element, said he had to quiet his younger self to direct this movie.
Even if this child bring you there, now it's a new deal. You're not 10 years old anymore. you have experience in life. You have to reorganize your way of thinking and your way of working. So I just hope that this little 10 years old boy is just proud of the film.
Dane DeHaan says that he shared Besson's enthusiasm for the story and was amazed to get the part of Major Valerian.
We were eating some eggs, and he was like, "Hey, I'm making the movie I've wanted to make my entire life, and I want you to star in it." And it was so, it was so overwhelming and kind of like surreal. I didn't even really understand what was happening. And he sent me the script 2 hours later. And I read it, and I called him, and I was like, "I love this." And I remember him saying, like, "Oh, I'm so happy, I'm so happy."
British fashion model Cara Delevingne says that working with Besson was both overwhelming and amazing as an actor.
It's completely overwhelming, but at the same time, when you're working with Luke, who's wanted to do this project since he was a kid, he knows every character, every situation, every environment so well that when he describes it, it's almost like you're there. So he was like the best tour guide of, you know, Alpha and the universe as anyone could have.
Besson says that his exhaustive knowledge of the storylines helped him take the actors to places that they could only imagine because the environments were inserted later in post-production.
It's more like the actors goes for a journey to the unknown, and I am Google Earth. So they can refer to me, should I take right or should I take left?
You should take left.
You know, I'm just like, it's not, I'm the reference in a way. I am like, they want to write a letter and I am the dictionary.
Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets also stars Clive Owen as General Aaron Fillet, Valerian and Laureline's commanding officer. Musician Herbie Hancock stars as Alpha's defense minister, while singer Rihanna plays Bubble, a shape-shifting, exotic entertainer. And John Goodman lends his voice to Egon Cyrus, a Jabba the Hutt kind of intergalactic gangster. Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets is rated PG-13 for sci-fi violence and action and suggestive material with some brief language. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On July 13th, Chinese dissident and political activist Liu Xiaobo died of liver cancer at the age of 61. He is the first Nobel Peace Laureate to die in custody since von Ossietzky's death in Nazi Germany. With his passing, one of the world's strongest voices in defense of human rights and democracy has been silenced. Liu Xiaobo was a literary critic and writer, professor at Beijing Normal University, and a guest lecturer at a number of universities outside of China. As an advocate for nonviolent political reform, a multi-party political system, separation of powers, government accountability, and a free market system, he eventually fell afoul of the Chinese government. He came to international prominence during the Tiananmen Square protests in 1989, first as a participant in a hunger strike, and later for his negotiations with China's military forces that allowed hundreds of students to disperse peacefully, even as protesters in the surrounding streets were met with a bloody show of force. Over the next 26 years, he was imprisoned four times on charges such as instigating counter-revolutionary behavior, involvement in the democracy and human rights movement, disturbing the social order, and inciting the subversion of state power. This last charge stemmed from co-authoring Charter 08, a manifesto modeled partly on Charter 77, which Czech dissidents drafted in 1977. In 2010, while in prison, Liu Xiaobo was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for his long and nonviolent effort to advance human rights in China. Beijing authorities did not permit him to attend the ceremony, where he was represented by an empty chair. Mr. Liu dedicated his life to the betterment of his country and humankind, and to the pursuit of justice and liberty, said Secretary of State Rex Tillerson in a written statement. In his fight for freedom, equality, and constitutional rule in China, Liu Xiaobo embodied the human spirit that the Nobel Prize rewards. In his death, he has only reaffirmed the Nobel Committee's selection. Liu Xia, Liu Xiaobo's beloved wife, who has been under house arrest and whose own well-being and freedoms are now a concern of the United States government and broader international community, once said that one day, even if he's not regarded as a hero, he'll be thought of as a very good citizen. Liu Xiaobo was indeed a very good citizen.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after this.